All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Strength Academy podcast. Grayson here, joined by Mundo.
What's up, y'all?
And this is the first episode of the new year, so we thought that we'd kick things off new year in case anybody is new to weightlifting or wanting to kind of try things out, or just looking to really double down and focus more on their training in the new year. Maybe you were a little distracted the last couple of months, and you just kind of need to get back on track and remember really what's important when you're kind of getting started or redialing in or whatever kind of effort you're trying to make. Yeah. We thought we'd kind of talk about some of the things that we think are, other than going to the gym and doing what your coach says, what are some of the things that we think are important when new people are starting out? What are some of the conversations we like to have with new people when they come in?
Yeah.
About what to expect, what we expect out of them. So yeah, I think we're going to kick things off.
Yeah, so Grayson came up with this great way of kind of introducing new athletes to how we want them to progress, and that doesn't just include, you know, what lifts you know, they're getting better at, or how much weight they're lifting, or how strong they're getting. It also includes their ability to recover and how they approach their training and things like that. So a lot of the time when we get new athletes, and I'm talking about younger athletes, usually like middle schoolers or high schoolers, a lot of them come to us with some kind of physical activity that they've been doing before, they want to get better at, or they want to build their general athleticism. So I thought that the way that Grayson introduced some of these concepts to them was very, very intuitive and kind of gets them on board with the process of, oh, I have to do certain things to get better at something else. Or there's certain things involved that are outside of just picking up a barbell. So let's get into what some of the stuff that you kind of wanted to give to these new athletes as tools to use to develop them into becoming more athletic and better weightlifters in general.
Yeah, so like you said, this was kind of initially geared towards some of our youth athletes that have come in recently, but it's something that can really scale up and apply to really anybody starting out.
Right.
And then full credit to my mom, who I was explaining that I had a hard time like conveying these things through conversation. She's like, why don't you just write it down? Like, oh, you just give them a pamphlet and then you don't, and then you can refer to it later. So thanks, Mom. So with the youth kids, a lot of what we start with is, we've talked about before that I like linear progressions for young athletes and people with little to no experience with the barbell. I think that learning how to squat and press and deadlift and clean first with a kettlebell, then with a barbell, and kind of just progress and change exercises as they get more confident. So the first thing that I wanted to do is, you know, it's really hard when you're first starting out to have the long-term view available.
Right.
So if you're starting in on somebody with a linear progression, the first thing that we kind of wrote out was that, you know, okay, so our goal is that we're going to advance our workouts 2 kilos every time we repeat an exercise. We're going to alternate between these two. And then really making sure that they know that this might seem kind of boring at first, or too easy, or really difficult, depending on how well you're doing at squatting and what flexibility stuff we're working on. But showing them that, you know, that learning the form is the first thing.
Right.
The most important thing is building the base of technically correct movements.
Right.
And I think that if you're a coach, keeping in mind that the first barbell back squat workout you give someone is not going to look good.
Right.
And that's okay.
Yeah, there's going to be some uncomfortableness too surrounding it.
Yeah, but by the sixth one, it'll be, oh, okay, you're really learning the form. So you can continue to make those little tiny jumps, especially if you're running a linear progression from the bar upwards on squats. You can go up a kilo and they won't notice.
Sure.
But so making sure that they understand that the first phase, right? So we call it phase one, is learn how to squat, learn how to deadlift, learn how to press. Those are kind of the main cornerstones.
Right.
And that two, when you're doing this, show them, and sometimes it helps to draw like a graph. Sometimes they can just kind of get it if you're talking about it, but say, okay, well, small increments. Like if we're going up 2 kilos a day, 3 days a week, over the course of 6 months, this is where you're going to get if we stick to the plan. And making sure that they know that, okay, well, this isn't like cool yet, but if I just stick to this like little sequence, like making them understand that it's tiny amounts of getting better throughout the week just compile over the long run.
Yeah, it's that Kaizen principle of that 1% better, like every time. So like every workout, you're just trying to do a little bit better than you did before and just trying to make improvements, small improvements. It's not like you're adding 10 kilos to your squat every week or anything like that. You're just adding a 2 or 3, which is manageable for, especially for beginners. And so one of the things that I thought was really interesting was that we asked one of our athletes, one of our youth athletes, who's more well-developed weightlifter at this point.
He's been going about 3 years.
Yeah, so he's been with us for a little bit, and he's been training with Grayson for a long time. And so Grayson kind of went back and asked him, like, do you remember me teaching you how to squat and do all these basic things? Like, because like, when they get to this point where they're hitting PRs and they're starting to qualify for national competitions and they're starting to get into the realm of like becoming a very good weightlifter, they all start somewhere, right? So you get this 11-year-old in the door, you get this 8th grader in the door, and you know, what do you teach them? You have to teach them everything. Like, you basically have to teach them
how to breathe
right, how to stand upright, how to not slouch over. Like, you'd be surprised how many 11-year-olds or how many like middle schoolers don't know how to hinge at the hips, and how many of them just slump over from that constant cell phone posture that's been ingrained in our culture. And we'll get to talking about culture in a little bit, but we're gonna go ahead and move along this weightlifting train. But like, I thought it was so interesting talking to Colby about his experience learning how to weightlift, and he's just become such a well-developed weightlifter. Like, he just PR'd this week twice. Like, he PR'd a power clean and power jerk at 90 kilos, and then he had a 72 kilo snatch yesterday on a heavy day. So like, his progress is the where he's come from is astounding. But you don't think about where athletes start, and sometimes people will get new athletes and you know, they won't know some of the basic stuff that Grayson's trying to teach them with what we're trying to develop in them is a whole individual, and not just a weightlifter, but somebody that's able to recover from any workout and know some good habits that that they're supposed to have. So one of the things that you brought up to T-Roy was that Gatorade and water and like are not interchangeable. Like, one of the things is like nutrition and how athletes think about what they put into their bodies. Everybody thinks that Gatorade's one of those sports drinks. Oh, it must be good for you. It's a sports drink, right? So like, it's meant for athletes, which is kind of true. But if you look at the label and you look at like what's involved in the ingredients, you see that there's a lot of sugar in these types of drinks. So one of the things that I saw one of the new athletes making an adjustment was starting to drink more water, which I thought was phenomenal. So like, we're teaching them the basics of how to be a better athlete right off the bat. And sometimes you'll get other people from other areas of expertise, like CrossFitters, right? You'll get somebody that's done CrossFit for a long time, so they know kind of how to lift, they know a little bit about being an athlete, but like, they still miss some of the basics sometimes. So like, what else do you cover in this transition of being just a regular person to being an athlete?
Yeah, so when we finish kind of laying out like, okay, here's what the program's structure is going to be, this is what's going to be expected of you, right. It's kind of, once we kind of take away any surprises that'll be popping up, it's like, nope, these are the things that we're focused on for this phase.
Sure.
The next thing that I like to address is kind of nutrition and hydration. And the main thing is, especially with kids, is that you can't like push a diet on a kid.
Right.
You can't say you're never going to drink soda again and you have to weigh your food and you have to measure it, because you're just going to give that kid an eating disorder. You can't,
right,
like, make it an 11-year-old download MyFitnessPal and worry about how much protein they're getting.
Right.
Like, that's unethical, and it's also insane.
Right.
Like, they need to have a little bit of wiggle room. So what I really like is to kind of give examples of, like, just be really, really simple with things. So, you know, like, saying just try to eat more whole foods throughout the week. So, like, if you can, you know, have oatmeal for breakfast instead of Lucky Charms, you know, that's a great step. Even if you put brown sugar in the oatmeal, like, you're still getting a more nutritious breakfast than, right, you know. So kind of looking, saying like, okay, well, like, just try to drift towards like potatoes and rice and, you know, whole grains and eat vegetables throughout the day.
Right.
And one of the really helpful things that I've found with kids and also men in their early 20s is you don't have to like the vegetables you're eating. Just kind of take them like a pill. Because we've had some younger guys that just, they're not really into cooking. They don't like to kind of do this stuff, or their parents don't cook a lot of veggies, and it's just get a bag of spinach and just eat a handful of it.
Sure.
Just once or twice a day, just grab a handful and eat 5 or 6 leaves like a pill. And that's still better than nothing. And that's a start, right? So when you're starting out, like, so if you're an adult taking up weightlifting or you're getting your kids into it, when you're first starting out, don't try to make all of the changes at once. Just like we're only learning the first few exercises, the most basic things, we want to do the same thing with eating. And that's just eating 3 to 4 times a day. You'd be surprised at how many people like skip lunch or snack, right? You know, drinking water throughout the day. And it's even, you know, just not saying don't have any sugary drinks, but just limit them sometimes. Or, you know, Gatorade's got the middle Gatorade where there's a little bit of carbs, but not as much.
Sure.
And then, you know, just saying things like try starting every day with a big glass of water. Like first thing when you wake up, like that's the one little change you need. Because I don't know if you remember, but as a teenager, I was like probably chronically dehydrated all the time. I think I drank nothing but Mountain Dew for like 2 years. back when you could buy it in high school.
Code Red or regular Mountain Dew?
Oh, it was both, man. You got to be a connoisseur. So yeah, I like to kind of say, like, you know, think about just trying to eat, you know, hearty, healthy things, you know, meat and eggs, veggies and potatoes, rice, and then, you know, making sure that they know that it's not, you have to do this stuff all the time. It's just kind of generally moving towards like, okay, well, if you're going to have toast or strudel, have 2 hard-boiled eggs too, you know, those sort of little things where it's just trying to like, without adding complication, like these are the macronutrients you need, these are the vitamins you need, and trying to get people to track that, just be like, oh, just try to have some more of this kind of generally unprocessed healthy choices on top of whatever you're having for fun. So it's not stop eating Doritos forever. It's just like also have a tuna fish sandwich.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, so the approach isn't like restrictive. So we don't tell
it's additive.
Yeah. It's not restrictive. So like we don't tell our athletes don't do this or don't do that. Just like maybe add some more vegetables, maybe drink some more water, try to sleep a little more. So it's so like, we're not saying stop doing what you're doing. We're just saying add these things in. And then maybe they'll take over as habits in the long run, you know, as things that you start to do. But I think that's how we build ourselves over time. And being the new year, people are starting to make resolutions and trying to say, like, I want to quit this habit or do this. So, like, there's some discussions about motivation and discipline and things like that. And I think that maybe adding things in, just drinking more water, eating more vegetables, getting more sleep, just trying to add some of those things instead of taking things away from yourself. This is a better approach, especially with teenagers and young folks, where there's like they don't feel like something's being taken away from them. They just have to try to add some more stuff into their routine.
Yeah, I think that's a really helpful way of approaching behavior change in general versus, you know, saying stop drinking soda. Right. Say drink more water, and that naturally kind of displaces a little bit of soda. So it's a really good way to kind of hack your own brain where it's, you know, if your goal is, you know, to lose some weight and you're not really feeling up for the weigh and measure life, if you say eat more vegetables at every meal, but just don't even change anything else, just eat more vegetables, you're going to fill up and eat less because you have a, like, 1/3 of your plate is broccoli and the rest is still chicken Alfredo.
Right.
But the whole thing wasn't chicken Alfredo, and that's progress.
That is progress, yeah.
So I think that the problem that people run into when they're starting out, and as we've kind of addressed the addicting nature of weightlifting too, is if you get started and you get obsessed, you're all of a sudden trying to do everything all at once. Mm. You're trying to say, okay, well, how many times a week can I make it into a sauna? Do I need to start taking ice baths? Do I need to start, you know, doing all of these other things? How many times a week should I be training? Am I not training enough? Can I train for longer? And you kind of get really hooked on these things, but what that leads to is burnout. So if you're looking to start up, really kind of just be like, even if I want to go, I'm going to go a little bit less than I want to.
Yeah.
I'm going to do 3 days a week, and I'm just going to make sure those are really good. And if I can maintain that habit for X period of time, then you add the 4th, and then you add the 5th.
Yeah.
And you know, it's the once you can get down eating more unprocessed foods, and then maybe saying, okay, well, now I only have soda at dinner on, you know, every other day or something like that. Maybe then once you get your habits down and you're making healthier choices, that's going to take care of, you know, at least 50% of your goal anyway. Yeah. Like if you just want to perform better or look a little better, taking care of just kind of like your kind of default decision making goes a long way. And then adding in that added discipline of weighing and measuring is kind of like a more advanced thing.
So yeah, it's, for sure.
We've talked about, you know, diet is like a training program where if you come in the first day and you've never snatched before and somebody's making you do like tall snatches followed by like snatch balances and like eight different exercises off the blocks, it's kind of a, you know, too much too soon. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, no, how do we hold the bar over your head first? Like, that's the important thing.
Right, right.
So to me, that like, this is the overhead position is just drink some water today.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, have something that isn't flavored over the course of today. Yeah. And those things, I think, are really kind of important, because you don't want to, well, with adults trying to make a change, you don't want them to burn out.
Right.
And then with kids, they've already got, like, I remember being that age, and it is just inner turmoil all the time. Like, there was nothing easy about being an eighth or ninth grader.
Oh, no.
You know, like, because you're learning social things. And you're
on the verge
this.
Of puberty.
Yeah, and then
your body's growing.
And then you throw in, you have to get a scale and weigh everything that you eat.
That's a bit
like
much.
It's a bit much, and I think that it's probably counterproductive. And if you get too into that stuff, because the idea is that if you kind of make healthy habits early on, you don't really have to get to the point that you're weighing and measuring things. You just kind of eat well and maintain pretty naturally. Yeah. You know, if you can develop those habits, then you can say, okay, I want to gain some muscle or lose some weight, and, you know,
yeah,
you can make specific goals later on. But I think that, like, for youth athletes especially, like, you should never really be talking about body composition goals.
No, no.
Like, you should, like, never be phrasing it as, like, oh, we got to get you lean and mean.
Right.
Like, I think it's just, we're going to get you exercising and get you to eat a little bit better. And if in, you know, when you're a sophomore or junior, you say, I want to really try to double down on this.
Right.
Like, you have to wait for people to be ready.
Right.
And I think people feel like they have to do everything as hard as they can. And sometimes, you know, even for me at certain phases, like, training with a little bit more of a relaxed mindset allows me to kind of get better training in. Because if it's like, okay, I'm going to hold myself to this 5 days a week thing and, like, really, really, really dial in, I even get burnout, and I love doing this, and it's the only thing that I do all day.
Yeah.
So if I have a little bit of leeway about, like, oh, what, maybe if I leave, like, whatever my accessory work is as, like, a floating thing. Or it's just, like, I have a muscle group I want to work, but I'll pick an exercise when I get there. Just having that little bit of wiggle room helps me kind of stay on track.
Yeah, so keeps you engaged and motivated in your training.
Exactly. Like, so I think that everybody needs to find their right level of commitment. And if anything, when you're setting a goal or forming a new habit, undercommit first.
Yeah.
Like, just do a little bit where you're like, I could easily do more than this. And then once that's a habit, then add more.
Yeah.
Like, don't try to start at 100 miles an hour.
So, well, there's one area that I kind of, like, maybe disagree a little bit on, and that's, like, waiting till people feel when they're ready to do something. And so sometimes, like, if we wait till we're ready to do something, we won't ever get around to doing it because we won't ever feel completely prepared. But, like, in the case that Grayson's talking about, like, as your youth athletes are approaching autonomy and they're starting to get better at the sport and they want to advance, it comes on their level. They show the interest that they want to advance, they want to get better, so you help them do that. But you're not necessarily pushing them to say, oh, I want you to do this specifically, or I want you to snatch this number specifically. It's just like, you know what, I'm gonna help you get as good as you want to be, and then when they start showing more interest, then you help them dial in some of those other things that are a little more complicated and advanced. But, like, we for our folks, we like them all to compete. And the reason that we encourage people to compete is because they get the experience of what it's like to be on the platform. And you've gone through this whole training cycle, and then you have this small brief period where you get to kind of like maximize those efforts and show them to the rest of the world. So like, there's never a perfect time for you to say like, I'm ready to compete. I'm going to do this. Like, I'm going to like get all the records. I'm going to qualify for all the things. You're never going to be at that point. You have to build up to it. You have to build up. It's just like confidence, right? You build up through small successes over time. So we're trying to instill in these youth athletes these small successes over time that help them become confident to the point where they approach us later and say, hey, I want to get really good at weightlifting. What do I need to do now? Like, I'm already doing this stuff. What do I need to do to get better? And so that's where like that small variation for me takes place, is like, I don't necessarily look at every athlete that walks in the door and say they're going to be a world champion, right? They have to kind of show that initiative by showing up to workouts, putting in the work, making the progress that they need to, both in and out of the gym. So like, there's a little bit of like give and take when it comes to what people want to accomplish and how we get them there, because it has to be mutual.
Yeah, and I'd say that if you want a little bit more detail, go back and listen to our interview with Allie about motivational interviewing.
Yeah, yeah.
We do a lot of discussion about the stages of change, you know, meeting people where they're at, whether it's, have you even thought about making the change?
Right, yeah.
Are you contemplating it? Are you ready to do something but don't know what to do?
Right.
And so if you're interested in kind of like trying to figure out where you are on that stage, go back and listen to that. That's a really good episode that kind of weighs in. Mm-hmm. But I think that one thing that, so kind of getting to this next part of our write-up is, for new people coming in who haven't done a lot and don't already have kind of a routine, teach them how to warm up.
Teach them how to warm up.
I like to standardize that, especially with youth, where it's going to be the same every time. And what that does is within the first 3 weeks of somebody being in, they're already developing a little bit of autonomy. They already know what they're responsible for.
Right.
So what I really like is, so our gym is a training hall format. So we don't have class times. We just have open hours that we're there coaching. So what I really like to do is the first few times that I work with a kid, we have the written up warm up, and it's, you know, bike and arm circles and a little bit of foam rolling and just kind of general body weight warm ups. And then you run through with them the first few sessions. So if you have a new person, you're kind of monitoring the warm up, making sure it looks good. And then after a few sessions, once they've been through it, you just say, okay, go ahead and start your warm-up. Right. And then you get them back on track if they forgot something, or you say, oh, go check your book and see what's next.
Sure.
And you start developing that you're responsible for taking your notes, you're responsible for warming up, I'm here to help,
but
I'm not going to dictate every single aspect of the workout to you. And I think that that's one of those things that I really liked that Camargo talks about a lot, is developing autonomy where you can.
Right.
And yeah, I'm not going to say, oh, well, try to do some squats and I'm not even going to watch. Right. No, of course not. But like, I like getting people to the point that they come in and start warming up, and you can trust them to just kind of get in on that. And you check in and make sure that they're doing it right, and that they're not like skimping on warm ups, because right, kids hate doing arm circles for whatever reason. It's boring. But like, and say, okay, this is the warm-up. This is the only warm-up we're going to be doing. Maybe we'll change it in a couple months to be more advanced. But, like, this is the standard. This is what I want you to start with. And then getting them to a point where they're autonomous with that. And then they know that they need to be eating and drinking water. And that they know that they're taking notes. And they kind of understand how to progress their program. And if you kind of present all of this stuff at the front end, I think it's comforting for people to know what's expected of them.
Yeah, of course.
And I think that having like astronomically high standards of people is a pitfall people fall into sometimes, where it's just like, you're going to be the best.
Right.
And you got to be the best. And it's like, no. You're the only standard that I kind of, you know, we set a standard that is just that we kind of expect everybody to work hard, but we don't really care where you are as long as you're like coming in and working towards it. And I think that like getting that kind of dialed in is this is going to be simple at the beginning, but it's not going to be easy. And it's easy for, but here's a way to understand what we're going to be doing. But the only thing that we expect is that you're coming in and trying.
Yeah.
And I think that, so I do kind of have, you know, high standards in that I want people to want to be there.
Right.
Like if,
yeah, yeah.
You know, or even, or, you know, to put in work even on days that you don't feel like being there. Right. 'Cause that's just sort of a very important underlying thing about training, is like, if it's not feeling right, well, we're going to find something that you can work on today. But yeah, I think that you also have to be careful as a coach when starting people off to put too much pressure on people to progress too quickly.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why I like the standard of, you know, it's like, well, we just expect everybody to work when they come in and you're going to try. And that's, and those are the only things, like if you're working towards something, it can be just from an objective standpoint, like a disastrous technique session.
Yeah.
But if you came in and still tried for an hour, like that's, I'm satisfied with that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's just kind of where I land as a coach is okay. That like, that's sort of what I want people getting out of like the beginner program, right. Is trust the program, have the long-term view, develop the habits, and just get used to coming in and trying for the day. And sometimes it's not going to work and sometimes it's going to go great, and learning those little things about the training process. Yeah. 'Cause training is a weird thing, 'cause it's not just, I'm going to hit the gym a few days a week, right. Or it's, no, I've got a plan. And now what I do this week affects next week.
Right.
And just kind of seeing how those choices day to day, or the habits that you're developing are impacting future you.
Yeah.
It helps you imagine future you better.
Right. Well, I think that's evident in the idea of, like, we've had athletes that have not stayed with us because they moved away or anything like that, but still make progress because they chose to do something more consistently, right? So, like, just the fact that they showed up to the gym more times in a row, they got better. So, like, the idea is that we want them focused on progressing through that, whether it's through the linear progression or through whether the training is for competition cycle or things like that. The whole idea is to get them from point A to point B and be better at the end, right? So yeah. When we're training youth athletes and anybody in general that's new, you all start somewhere, right? Somebody had to teach Kobe Bryant how to shoot a free throw, how to hold a ball, how to pass the ball. Somebody had to teach, you know, whatever your favorite quarterback, how to throw a spiral, right? They didn't just pop out of their mom's womb knowing how to do all those things. Somebody had to teach them. Somebody had to coach them. So when we get youth athletes in, we're coaching and training them how to be not only weightlifters, but athletes in general. So we have to take into account the whole person as far as, like, you know, teaching them the basics of, like, drinking water, eating more vegetables, sleeping more, how to warm up properly, what to do during your workout, how to make adjustments and things like that. So, like, eventually their autonomy develops. And like we were talking about with Daniel Camargo, he likes to develop autonomy in his athletes so that they're not coming to him every 5 minutes asking him, like, oh, well, how much weight should I put on this for my back squat? Or, you know, they know those things already. They have some autonomy developed. And eventually, you know, you get to the point where you can do some stuff on your own and be okay, but you still need that coach's feedback when you're doing the complicated stuff, right? So, like, even with back squats, some athletes don't do their back squats in the gym. They do them at home. And so we don't get to see some of those parts of their lifts. But when they're in the gym, we're making adjustments to the way they stand, how they're upright in their posture, like the way they're holding the barbell and things like that. So, like, yeah, they know how to squat. Like, they probably squatted 1,000 times already, but there's still small things that can be adjusted and little improvements that can be made even though they're advanced athletes.
Yeah, so I think the main thing is that if you're a coach getting new people in the door this time of year, or a person just starting out and wanting to get into training more seriously, or making some goals around taking your training more seriously or getting into the new sport, like, just keeping in mind that you, like, starting as hard as you can is a really good way to be bored by February.
To burn out quick, yeah.
So kind of making sure that you're starting with the level of commitment or the level of change that you can realistically make.
Yeah.
And if that's just this month, I'm gonna drink 3 glasses of water a day, that's a big start. And that's something that, you know, wherever you are in your training career, there's really, really good athletes that are really, really bad at hydrating.
Oh, that's true.
So, yeah. Like, these little things that we talked about with nutrition and hydration are things that you need to check in on and remind yourself of, because yeah. I can certainly get caught up and get through a day where all I've drank is coffee. You know, yeah. It happens to me more regularly than it should. I think that you just want to make sure if you're coaching that you're not trying to be super hard on everybody all the time. And yeah. you're just making the standard like, nope, I just want you to come in and learn. And I want you to come in and try what we're going to be working on. But not weigh and measure your food. And we're going to lose 50 pounds this year. And we're going to do this and this and this. Because I think that one scares people off, and two, it's kind of a dick move.
Right. Like, yeah, a little bit.
Like you can't just go in and start you know tearing people apart like that. So I think that the main thing is just, you know, so get your warm up strategy down really well. If you're looking to make some goals for your training, just, you know, the majority of the injuries that people get are from lack of sleep, lack of hydration, and improper warm-up. If you take care of those three things, your training is going to be a lot better throughout the whole year, regardless of what program you're doing, or if you're training at home, or if you're training in classes at the gym.
Right.
The little things, like just getting a little more water or getting an extra hour of sleep, that sort of stuff really, really matters over the long run.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking about this the other day, because so we've got a meet coming up next weekend, and I'm going to lift as a 96 for the first time, which is kind of crazy to me. But I had this kind of funny thing where I was thinking about it the other day, and when I was in the Army and I was deployed to Afghanistan in 2010 is when I first started wanting to lift weights. And I was about 150 pounds, so I was like a 70 kilo,
okay,
you know, somewhere in that 70 kilo range. And I started lifting weights, and I was like, okay, well, I just want to get bigger. And I was like, maybe I could get to like 200. I'd like to be like 210 pounds. And it's really funny thinking back. And I thought that was going to happen that year. Right. I thought I was like, oh, I'm just going to work out, I'm going to eat, and then I'll be like a fairly muscularly dense 210. Like, it'll be great. It'll be super easy. But no, that took a decade, man.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like when we have lots of kids, you know, cause you know, like early in high school, especially skinny kids, like they're kind of insecure. Like,
right.
It's like, oh, how do I get my shoulders wider? And you know, like, how do I, like, cause I want to be strong, but I also want to look like I'm strong. Like, that matters, especially to young men coming in. And like, just reminding them, it's like, just do it for a long time and do the basic things of eating and training, and you'll wake up in your mid-20s and be like, oh, I did it.
Right.
But like, you're not going to get there by senior year.
That's true.
Like, you know, you haven't matured yet. Right. So like, the thing that I didn't grasp when I was 18 was that you don't look like a grown man till you're a grown man.
Right.
Like, that's just not,
yeah.
It's just like when the, you know, 19 year olds are like, man, why isn't my beard, why can't I grow a very good beard? It's so patchy. It's just like, and just wait till you're like 30 and you can have a great beard. It's fine. So like, there's a lot of these things that it's like, it's just, you have to do the little things, but it's also that this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. Like,
yeah,
if you want 18 inch arms, that's going to be that's a multi-year commitment.
That's a 5-year project.
Yeah. Like that, it's not to say that like 10 years is like what it's going to take. It's just what ended up happening for me.
Yeah.
Like, it just, I had a point where my metabolism slowed down a little bit and I was able to put weight on again and it was fine. But
I,
like,
I had a similar experience to that. Cause like, I remember in 2010, I probably weighed 135 pounds. I used to run a lot and, you know, swim and do a lot of cardio things, and I was pretty thin. But over 10 years, I put on 20 pounds of muscle, or 30 pounds of muscle. So I weigh almost 160 right now. And most of it's muscle, thankfully. Like, a lot of it isn't just junk weight. But, like, I put on 30 pounds in 10 years of muscle. But it took that long.
Yeah, it's not an easy thing. Yeah. So if you're setting kind of goals for that, just put 10 good pounds on this year.
Yeah.
Don't, like even 10 medium pounds, and then you can lean out later.
Yeah.
But, like, so those are sort of the things that I remember being a young guy, getting into lifting, just having these sort of, like, unrealistic expectations about what was going to happen. And, you know, I look at my early training, and it was exactly the opposite of what we've talked about here today. It was a little of everything. It was lots of machines. It was tons of dumbbells. And, oh, what kind of curl am I going to do today? Where if I had spent that year learning how to squat and deadlift really well, I probably wouldn't have taken 10 years to figure that
right.
to like get to that point.
Yeah.
So like it's kind of interesting where the majority of the information you're getting, if you're not kind of in an Olympic weightlifting or powerlifting circle, is that you just got to take a lot of these supplements and do these kind of huge variety, high repetition exercise things. But really just kind of getting the basics down is like the most important thing, and kind of building from there. And that's where we like to start people. It's always, here's how you squat, here's how you pull, here's how you press.
Yep.
Let's get good at that. And then as you get better at it, we'll add more things to make sure you keep getting better. But I think, so if you're starting out or you're coaching people, just really try to lay out the big picture and emphasize how much the small details matter and how much of a factor time plays.
Yeah.
Because it's not a quick fix. I think, this morning, one of our masters lifters, she's also a CrossFit competitor, she did a 55 kilo clean thruster.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it had been, you know, so we completely broke her form apart and retaught her how to lift and did all this stuff over the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And just now, we're really starting to hit some, like, good strides. And one of the things that we talked about early on is, we're not going to see the benefits of changing this clean technique for a while. Right. It's going to take us some time. We have to unlearn things, then relearn them, and then get confident with them, and then get strong
in
them.
Get strong, yeah.
And it's really cool to see that it's like, no, you were consistent, and we redid everything, and we emphasized the technique, and now the weights are starting to climb. And now we're getting a lot more consistent with the positions, yeah. And you're thinking a lot less. And especially with weightlifting, like, just giving yourself some grace of, like, it's not going to make sense for a while, and it's fine. Like, it's like, oh, man, I'm still hopping forward. It's like, yeah, you're maybe, but we're also getting under the bar.
Sure.
You know,
yeah, so there's confidence is getting better. You know,
so, like, you know, giving yourself some grace that you're always going to be working on something, right. And it will make more sense eventually, but it might just be at the 2 year mark, you're like, oh, okay, now I'm really starting to get it.
Right.
And that's, you know, I think a weightlifting specific thing. Cause it takes some time to get comfortable, snatching and doing all that stuff.
Yeah. And everybody starts somewhere. I think that, the idea that you're just going to come in and, you know, be a professional weightlifter shouldn't really enter your mind until you've been doing it for at least 4 or 5 years. Like, you should get the basics down, just try to build strength, just try to do the regular small things, like dial in your nutrition and your sleep and your recovery, and just get strong and good at the movements, and then decide, like, how far you can take it. Like, just learn the basics first. Like, I know, and I appreciate people that are enthusiastic about trying to get as good as they can as fast as they can, but that's how you get burnout too. Like, that's how they experience, like, oh, I'm going to try to do everything right away. And then they get tired of it, or it's hard to maintain that. So, like, it's better to just build slowly. And this is how we progress people that come to the gym. We teach them the basics of how to warm up. We teach them the basics about nutrition and just hydration, and what their progression is going to look like from start of the beginner program, this linear progression, to the end of it. And then we get them on board to the team training, and then we start to develop them more as athletes. But that takes some time. It takes a little bit of, like, time to make that progress. So this is just something to refer back to. If you're starting out, this is how we start people out. It's not the only way to start out, but it's a way to start out. And this is just a way to get people on board with the kind of habits that are going to help you develop into a better athlete overall, a better weightlifter, and what we want to see and how we want to develop athletes over time.
Yeah, and I guess one final note for anybody that's starting a weightlifting journey this year and is consuming as much weightlifting content as they can. One, thank you for listening to our podcast.
Yeah.
But also, remember, I think that the biggest thing that I forgot when I started in on learning weightlifting was remember that the back squat is not a competition exercise. That's the most, I think that's the most often forgotten thing is I spent so much time trying to make my snatch go up by pushing my back squat.
Right.
And really it was a technique problem and I should have just been focusing on getting the snatch better instead of trying to get strong right away. So if you're starting out, put some time into that technique and just remember that the strength lifts are there to help, but you can't squat your way out of terrible bottom position in the snatch.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's kind of an example of some of the cultural things that we try to build into our beginners. And I think that what we're going to do for the second half of this is we're going to just kind of talk about the idea of there's kind of been a few things in the news with the assassination of the Iranian general and just some sort of different things about, it's interesting to think about the news or current events or just kind of your life in general.
Well, part of it through
cultural framework,
yeah,
right?
But part of it stems through, we've been talking about philosophy a lot this past year. And what good is it to just talk about it if we can't apply it to modern day scenarios, right? So what we're kind of maybe looking into the idea of is taking some of these current events that are happening and applying some philosophical lenses to them and seeing, if we can make some devil's advocate arguments, some regular arguments, but also kind of deconstruct why we think about the way we do about certain things. And that could involve the nutrition industry, political agendas and geopolitical happenings and just global awareness of what's happening around us all the time. So we have all these arguments about climate change and things like this, but what do we actually apply to them? Like, what kind of practical things can we do and the way that we think about these things? Like, how can we develop better, more solidified ideas about why we think about things the way we do? And so we're hoping to kind of take a look at some concurrent events. Like, let's just take this Iranian general thing that's happening right now, right? So there's different areas of thought that are involved. There's military strategy, there's philosophical ideas, there's even religious and those kinds of isms that are surrounding the situation, so that the situation isn't just one linear problem. It involves multiple areas of moral philosophy, involves political philosophy, it also involves general world awareness of what's going on. So we kind of want to delve into a little bit about what our stances are on some of these things, and maybe in the future we'll be a little more one-sided in our arguments, but not necessarily saying that we're right or wrong. It's just how we think about the situation. If we're thinking about it practically, if we're thinking about it like logically, but also there's always feelings involved. There's always how you feel about something and the way that you react to things based on emotion are just as much part of your awareness of something and how you deal with it as a reasoned argument is. And so we kind of want to delve into some of those ways that we think about things both reasonably and emotionally. So, and just kind of bring together some things to think about in the next year. Hopefully things don't get out of hand. But,
you never know.
But you never know. So, it's just another aspect of mental training, mental thought, reasoning out the way you feel about something, but also using those arguments to kind of solidify where you stand on things and how you view the world and how we view the world. And hopefully we'll agree on some things, we'll disagree on others, and we'll be able to just walk away with some things to think about.
Yeah, so I think that with the most recent stuff and just kind of admitting my biases right away, is I've come out of the military staunchly anti-interventionist and right. I'm a fairly kind of anti-war perspective. I think that, you know, for the most part, we gotta violence is a last resort, and we shouldn't really be flirting with that. But I think that one of the most interesting kind of realms to look at, particularly this conflict between kind of like a religious fanatical state government and the clashes in the U.S. about how we're rebuilding Iraq and these sort of things, is if you were an alien and you showed up, right? So if you're from the outer space point of view, what you have, if you don't know anything about it, is you have one group of people calling another, you have two tribes both calling each other terrorists,
right?
And both finding ways to like sneakily attack each other. And I think that you have to, and this is where I'm torn, because I feel like I have a hard time refuting moral relativism in that, like, oh, well, to them, we're the bad guys, sure. and to us, they're the bad guys, right. and who's actually right? I have a hard time saying that anybody can actually be right about anything. But my gut instinct is, it's just like, well, I kind of like our values, but that's just a personal bias, sure. right? So I think that, you know, the thing that I worry about with this is, like, it's just another example of getting caught up in stuff that doesn't really, like, shouldn't matter to us. Like, the thing is, it's like, oh, we're preventing him from, you know, it's like, okay, well, we'll kill this guy because he's, you know, been attacking U.S. soldiers that are in the region. But then if you take a step back and just, well, why do we have anybody there in the first place? Right. We've been there for 20 years. Like, let's, like, you know, take a step back and kind of try to reassess what we're actually up to. And I think that, you know, there's, like, I get the want of trying to make other people see things our way. Right. Because personally, I like lots about our society, not everything, but,
sure.
you know, I like the idea of, you know, a secular society and kind of the things that we tend to think are important, you know.
But are we a secular society?
Well, because by comparison.
Well, by comparison, yeah, but, like, if you look at the way the government has been reacting lately to, like, moral and ethical situations, it's siding more with one view of religion than any others. So, like, this idea that our government is completely secular is only partially true, because the people that make up the government, the people that are in these political positions, are religious people. So they bring their ideas to the table and implement those ideas in their policies.
Yeah, so that, I would say that's true. And whether or not we have a separation of church and state issue in the U.S., I think is kind of a separate issue. But yeah, I think that the dangerous thing is that when we have powerful people in positions that are kind of in a geopolitical stalemate with a group that's another religion, you immediately assume that you're right. And that's the problem. If you look at it from an Iranian perspective, they call us the Great Satan, right?
Yeah.
So they're like, the U.S. is morally corrupt. They are in violation of all of our religious things. Like, this is, like, they're trying to force their hedonistic kind of culture on the rest of the world.
Capitalism, their diet, their nutrition, all their thoughts and philosophies, they're trying to push it onto the rest of the world.
And so if you're in that perspective and you're saying, oh, okay, well, this is an attack on our religious keeping. So what you have is this kind of difference, this, like, war of ideas and this difference in perspectives. And I think that the solution to bridging a gap between different perspectives is probably not shooting at each other.
Well, here, let me think about this. So, like, have you ever seen that meme where Spider-Man's pointing to the other Spider-Man being like, hey, you know, you did this thing? So it's like that same scenario where, like, we're pointing fingers at each other and saying, you're the bad guy, or, like, hey, you stole my idea, or whatever. So it's like, if you took religion out of it, could we get along, right? If Iran didn't have this Islamic state of political ideas and philosophy in their government, and we didn't have these ideas of, like, God is everything, and country and guns and, you know, America, like, could we get along with each other? Like, would that, if we took out the religious philosophies, right? Because that's where we conflict the most, is in our country's beliefs on where we stand moralistically. So one country is an actual religious state, right? Yeah. And ours is an undeclared religious state. But we still have philosophies and ideas that have some religious connotations to them. So do we just not get along because of fundamental disagreements in philosophy based on religion? Or do we not get along with them because they're just not, like, we don't see any commonalities besides that?
Well, so I think that, like, whatever metaphysical framework you're operating under as far as the religion goes, I think that I think that the thing that drives humans to conflict is probably a lot more to do with resources and then making up a argument backed by your faith in some other way.
Sure.
So I think that, you know, it to say that if there were no religions, there would be no conflicts, I think is kind of a weak argument. Like, I understand the sentiment, and you could say, like, well, look at the Crusades. Like, do you remember the Children's Crusade when you literally sent thousands of children to take back, you know, Jerusalem, right, and in the Middle Ages? And it's like, oh, yeah, that was a pretty horrible thing done in the name of religion. And so there's a lot of those. But I think that, I don't know, maybe I'm a pessimist, but, like, I think humans will find a reason to start killing each other over anything else.
Because
what we've seen is that, you know, where the fastest, so, like, as we've said that, you know, the majority of people at least say that they're religious, that we're in power, like, we've never had, like, an atheist president, you know,
right?
But but generally speaking, the trend in the U.S. is that religiosity is kind of going down. The amount of people that actually go to church, these sort of things have gone down a little bit. But what you've also seen within that is an increase in attachment to things like political party.
Sure.
Where, like, so now it's not, you know, Catholics and Protestants arguing with each other, it's Democrats and Republicans arguing with each other. So I think that, you know, people will find, you know, so if we call it, like, a true world theory, where, like, there's a utopia at the end of this and it's heaven, or there's a utopia in the end of this and it's universal health care for everybody and everyone's going to have a higher standard of living,
right,
or there's a utopia that's everybody can have as many guns as they want and everybody just gets left alone and we, you know, whatever.
Sure.
So, like, whatever you see as the end point, and I think it's that strongly attaching to a end point, right? So I think that as we've seen the decline in, you know, religious tribal affiliation, we've seen a rise in political tribal affiliation.
Sure.
And I think that if we're going to have a serious conversation about, well, like, is it, like, a religious conflict? Like, are we supporting Israel because the evangelicals think that Jesus is going to come back there someday and we need it to remain in the Jews? Like, is this, like, why are geopolitical things are like that? And there is a significant portion of people that are trying to lobby and persuade based on what they think will happen at the end of days, which is wild.
Right.
But I think that if we eliminate that sort of stuff, we're still going to have these kind of conflicts. And I think one of the main conflicts we have when looking at, like, dealing with the current kind of Iranian state is that, have you heard of the idea of, like, open and closed societies?
Yeah.
So we live in a really open society where, like, it's sort of chaotic, right? Like, right, nothing's really kind of, we don't have, like, a fixed code that everyone follows. We kind of have room for you to dye your hair purple and wear a nose ring if you want to. Like, you can kind of take these weird,
sure,
kind of open, chaotic paths. And what people in closed societies have is a unified sense of culture.
That's
but
true.
There's probably benefits on both sides of that. So, like, we have this kind of idea that, okay, we have this laissez-faire, like, we're just going to live and let live, and maybe that guy's kind of a kook, but
sure,
he's allowed to be kooky and, like, live in his house and have, you know, goats or whatever he's doing,
sure,
in the backyard there. But, like, what we lack from that, and what's kind of interesting is to think about, you know, if we were in a more closed society, would people, because, like, we have a lot of freedom, but we also have a lot of people that feel like they don't have any meaning to their lives.
Yeah.
So, like, in a more closed society, do people maybe feel more meaning? Like, is that why it's kind of hard to, you know, break through some of that stuff? Where it's like, okay, well, if this is, like, the regiment and these are the rules, and, you know, that creates bigger families and kind of more social connections, right. Even if there's less degrees of freedom, there might be enough contentment there that you can't just throw material things at a closed society, right. And say, look at what you're missing, because they see all that as unnecessary.
Yeah, it's all...
They're like, this is distracting from the thing that actually gives us any sort of meaning in our day. And I think that we have to be careful that I think there's a large portion of the Iranian population that disagrees with the state of things, but sure. Just doesn't have any power to do anything. Just like there's, you know, weird pockets of people all over the U.S. that think that we need to have kings again, or think that we just need to burn the whole thing down.
Right.
Like, you know, there's like, you know, Texas still wants to secede. Right. Like, there's a non-insignificant number of people. But I think that, you know, it's these kind of ideas that are the way that... To think that the way that we think about things is exportable,
right,
isn't always a direct match to what's already there. And if we're gonna, if our standard is you have to be on our page entirely, or we're gonna be taking out your military, or we're gonna be influencing this region, like, I think that's what's gonna create the conflict and the resistance, right? So, like, just the idea that we have a say in who's controlling Syria, or, you know, like, what the government in Iraq should look like. Because, like, they just voted today to say the U.S. has to leave.
Right.
Because the Iraqi government said, hey, everybody out.
Right.
So if our response to that is, hey, that's not what I wanted, and then we put a new government in, well, of course people are going to get pissed about that, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If we really think that, you know, people have value and people can live how they want, it just feels to me like we're trying to put our fingers on the scale towards something.
Yeah.
And I can see where it's a problem if, you know, you're worried that, you know, and this is a very different example. I don't want to compare Iran to the Islamic State at all, because sure. They're very, very different. But, like, you know, so it's like, okay, well, maybe we needed to deal with ISIS because that's somebody that's thinking about world domination,
sure.
Right? Like, that's like if that's Hitler, right?
Right.
It's you know, if your goal is to conquer the world, then maybe we need to stop something.
Sure.
But if your goal is just to not trade with the U.S. anymore because you think that the way that we live is sleazy, like,
that's fine.
That's, I mean, it should be,
that's their
fine.
Choice. Yeah, that's right? Their choice. Yeah. Well, so, like, here's how I view the whole incident. We don't have much more time, so we won't spend much more time on this, but I'm gonna weigh in on how I see it. And that is from the perspective of, like, a road rage incident, right? So, like, one person cuts you off, so then you decide to tailgate them, and then they get mad, pump their brakes, so you pull your gun out of the glove compartment, you got your children in the back seat, and all of a sudden you're chasing this person down, you're driving through the streets, and you're super pissed, and you're going to do something about it, right? You've been disrespected.
Yeah.
Right? So then what happens is it just keeps escalating. All of a sudden you stop somewhere, you get out of your car, that person gets out of their car, you pull out your gun, you shoot them, or they shoot at you, and then one of the kids in the back gets hit. Right? So to me, like, that's what this whole scenario represents, is like, there's not going to be anything productive that comes out of this. It's just, we're going to be having vigils for children at the end of the incident. Like, all these guys that are going from these different bases over to this region of the Middle East, like, it's not going to be for a good time. Like, these guys can't even buy cigarettes. Like, some of them aren't even 21 yet. They can't even buy cigarettes anymore. But they're getting sent to a war zone in a country that they have no idea, like, what's the point of being over here? Like, we just basically escalated this thing to where we have to send troops. We have to send a response. We've been disrespected. Like, we can't let it stand.
And we're just stuck in this disrespect cycle. Where it's like, oh, you did this to me, so I'm going to do this to you.
Right.
And if we let that snowball, right? So the thing that kind of... Well, like you said, like, the new, like, oh, you can't buy cigarettes till you're 21.
Yeah.
Like, well, then we need to raise the military service age to match that.
Because yeah.
if you're able to make the decision that you're able to go to war, or you have to register for the draft, like, you should be able to make a decision about whether you want to smoke Camel cigarettes or not. And I don't think it's a good idea to smoke.
Yeah.
But
right.
But if, as far as, like, potentially hazardous things go, learning how to drive a tank is probably more hazardous in the next 3 years than whether you smoke or not.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just the amount of training accidents that happen, too.
Yeah, as an 18-year-old, I learned to fix multi-million-dollar airplanes, but I couldn't buy an alcohol yet.
Yeah.
So, it's ridiculous.
And it's crazy when it was just alcohol, but it's even more crazy when it's tobacco products. So I think that's kind of like a really weird thing, is that in the last couple of weeks we've had this, you aren't adult enough to make decisions about
your health,
but you're adult enough to go fight the Iranians.
Right.
And I think that that's just kind of objectively nuts. And I don't know why more people aren't upset about it.
Because it makes no sense at all.
It blows my mind. But I think that, you know, what you have to, the lens that I kind of view it through now is, you know, we've got our youth athletes, right? And is anything going on in the Middle East important enough for me to be okay with one of our kids being drafted in a year and a half to go fight over there?
Oh, that's a good question.
You know, because now I feel kind of protective of our group of kids. And it's just like, well, if we're going to have a military situation where, like, these people that I know, that I now look at as children, because, like, when I was 18, I thought I was grown up, but I look at 18-year-olds now, and I'm like, you are such a kid. Like, you're still, like that's still a child. Like,
right.
And then, okay, maybe that's the argument that you shouldn't smoke. But if it's the argument you shouldn't smoke, you probably also shouldn't walk around in the desert with a machine gun. And I think that, you know, so I just don't understand how people seem to separate the human element from this, right?
Right, right.
Where, like, the people that we're sending there are, like, 18 to 22-year-olds for the most part. And that's not even to come into contact with, like, the civilian casualties that are bound to happen. And I think that we need to look at things from, like, the human level of, like, suffering perspective, right, where it's just, if Iran is a dick, fine, but is it worth, you know, like, imagine any kid that you're around, right? Like, and then just be like, okay, well, in 3 years, they can just grab you and make you go. And is it worth that, you know? So, like, trying to bring things, and I think that people think from this kind of, like, global moving chess pieces around thing. But, like, what's even the end game that we're trying to get here?
Right.
What is it that we want? If we just want to be left alone, shouldn't we treat others the way that we want to be treated and leave everybody else alone? Like,
yeah, no, that's true.
And I think, and I don't know, I think that you can't make a purely isolationist argument, but I think that, I don't know, I think it's just an example of we're trying to be too influential with things. Right. Like, we, like, feeling like we have the, just because that's what we've done for so long. Like, I think just the way that the world was structured at the end of World War II just kind of has put us in this situation where we feel like we have these tendrils where we can go over here and maybe stir some stuff up, or go collapse this government in South America, or go, you know, topple a regime here to make something more favorable. And I think that if you're looking at it as chess pieces, it's a totally different effect than I'm going to take my nephew and put him on a plane to fight the Iranians for what? So that they can buy Coca-Cola? Like, I don't understand. Like,
I don't even know what the draw is. Like, other than being disrespected, which I don't think is a good valid argument for blowing anything up. It was like, oh, I feel disrespected, I'm going to go kill this person.
Yeah, I mean, like, it just doesn't. If you look back at all of the tit for tats, at a certain point, everybody's just saying it's self-defense.
Right.
And somebody just has to stop escalating. And I'd rather us be the country with the moral perspective to say, okay, it's going to be us. We're going to stop escalating.
Yeah, we'll take a step back. We'll reassess the situation. It's like, long-term, we don't want to fight a war. Things got out of hand for a tiny bit, but we have the potential to pull things back and not escalate things to where, like, we're talking about a draft and war and things like this. Like, we can avoid that situation, right? Or are we past that point now?
Well, and I think that there's always a good chance that we'll avoid. And I think the draft is really useful rhetorically, but I don't know if there'd ever be, after Vietnam, I don't know if it would ever happen again.
Yeah.
But the fact that it could is, like, enough to to be wary about, you know, being, having a vested interest in you know, the nation or being a patriot, like these sort of things don't have to go hand in hand with kind of unquestioningly just like diving into something.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Well, so that kind of concludes today. That I mean, we just wanted to talk a little bit about some of the current events and how philosophy applies to them, and then just get some new ideas flowing in there. So if you have any feedback for us, you can email us at asaweightlifting@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram at Albuquerque Strength Academy. And if you have questions, just ask your questions. Don't just say, hey, I have questions. Just ask them. Like, you don't have to do anything.
The whole message can be just a question. Here it is. But yeah, so I think, yeah, so that's just kind of our perspectives as, you know, a couple of guys who have served and have kind of landed in this, like, ambiguous kind of just doesn't feel quite right.
Yeah. Seems like it's a situation we don't need to be involved in. Like, it doesn't have to escalate to what it's being turned into.
Yeah, so I hope for the best there. And if you found this interesting, let us know.
If you want to start weightlifting, you know, just give us a call or schedule an appointment with us for a drop-in, and we'll get you started weightlifting, and we'll set some new goals for 2020. Let's get strong, everybody.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, until next time, y'all. Happy lifting.